The following program is a production of St. Peter the Rock Media and is brought to you by you. If you like it, consider making a donation and supporting Catholic radio programming on AM 1260 The Rock. Click on the Donate Now button in the upper right corner of our webpage.
AM 1260 The Rock and the Catholic Diocese of Cleveland proudly present Where We Worship. This 30-minute, locally produced program highlights Northeast Ohio's Catholic parishes and institutions, their rich histories, and what they do to meet the spiritual needs of those they serve. Now here's your host, Bob Taya.
Welcome to Where We Worship, a program highlighting parishes and Catholic institutions throughout Northeast Ohio with the intention of offering you insight and understanding on the importance of community in our Catholic faith. Well, today, as we continue to weather this COVID-19 pandemic, we're more than ever keenly aware of our parishes and Catholic institutions and their importance in how we worship and develop our relationship with the Lord. Well, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops best describes the parish as the place where the church lives. Parishes are communities of faith, of action, and of hope, and they are where the gospel is proclaimed and celebrated. Parishes are the home of the Christian community. They are the heart of the church. And why are they essential to our relationship with God? Well, one only needs to turn to Scripture in his letter to the Hebrews. St. Paul writes, "We must consider how to rouse one another to live and do good works. And we should not stay away from our assembly, as is the custom of some, but encourage one another, and this all the more, as you see the day drawing near." Well, today on Where We Worship, we look at the rich history, the services, the current ministries, and the people of St. Charles Parish in the Cleveland suburb of Parma. Well, the parish can truly be described as an institution dating back to a time when the Parma area was rural in nature during the early 1920s. The parish grew as the city did, at one time the fourth largest city by population in the state of Ohio. Well, today, St. Charles remains a landmark on Ridge Road and continues as an important institution serving the Parma community. And this is your host, Bob Tayak, and joining me on Where We Worship to look at the history and the vibrancy of St. Charles Parish in Parma is the pastor, Father John Carlin, and parochial vicar, Father Josh Korak. And we'll start first, Father Carlin, to talk about your tenure as pastor at St. Charles. How long have you been there?
Well, first of all, Bob, thanks very much for the kind invitation to join you. I've been at St. Charles as pastor in my 34th year, and I was the assistant pastor for 4 years before that. So I've had a long run.
You have had a long run. So you know Parma inside and out and the people of the parish. But that's why we invited you in, because we'd like to look at that. And you share quite a legacy of long-tenured pastors during which the parish, I believe, will be celebrating a 100th anniversary fairly soon.
We are. We're looking forward to our 100th anniversary in 2023. As a matter of fact, the chairman of our centenary committee is here at the table, Father Josh. He's taken that on. I did the 60th, the 75th, and the 90th, so we'll see what he comes up with for the 100th.
So you have the challenge.
I do.
We should mention, Father Josh, you're one of the newly ordained
diocese and have entered
into St. Charles as the place to, if you will, get your feet wet.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's very good. The early history describes a small wood frame church constructed at Wilbur Avenue and Ridge Road. Does it not, Father? And it's come a long way from that.
I've seen pictures, and it's a memory for some people. When I went there 40 years ago, there were still a few people around who remembered the founding. They're gone now. But I heard many stories about them. And the parish has only had three pastors, Father Monahan for 44 years, Monsignor Corrigan for 19, and they've put up with me for 33 years. So
really?
It's only three pastors in 100 years.
In 100 years, that's really incredible. It says a lot for not only you as a pastor and your predecessors, but really for the people. That's a faith-filled group, really, that you've been able to pastor there at the parish.
I'm blessed in that regard. I wish I could take credit for it, but they're just great people, wonderful people.
One of the other elements I think that we really need to touch on is a Catholic education, that component. That's been a prominent portion, even going back to the early years of the parish, has it not?
Very true. And in those days, the first thing was get the school up. And the parish had 30 years in a frame church but they had a masonry school building within the first 4 years. And from the beginning, there was a great emphasis upon education in the parish. They began with 13 families. How they did it, I don't know, but with 13 families. But the 20s were a prosperous time, and by the end of the 20s, there were about 300 kids in school. But in its day, 1964, there were 2,400 kids in that school.
2,400.
Five classrooms of every grade, and the sisters putting up with 50 or 60 kids. At one time, they did split shifts. One group of kids in the morning, another group of kids in the afternoon. God bless the Ursuline sisters.
Wow. No, that was going to be my next question. We always like to highlight which order of sisters had actually run the
Ursuline school. Sisters of Cleveland were there, 24, and graduated over 14,000 graduates
14,
in their time.
14,000 graduates.
And we were blessed up until last year. The last sister was Sister Patrick Marie, and she left us. Mother took her back to the mother house. She was in her mid-80s, and she didn't want to go, but it was time. And so the sisters were well represented at our place up until a year ago.
Wow. So. That is amazing. Because of the migration of Polish Americans, Parma and the parish has been associated with the Polish American community over time, but was that always the case?
No, not really. At the beginning, as what I can find from early names, it was German and Irish. And it was only after the Second World War, when servicemen came back, and they started building those Parma bungalows. And actually not Polish, but Slovak would be number one.
Oh, really?
With Bohemians and Polish close after that. There's our local councilwoman, Debbie Lime, is pushing a Polish village concept along Ridge Road. And she's done a marvelous job. You have vital storefronts and lots of various activities. But she's pushing the Polish end of it. But if you look at the books, more Slovaks than anything else.
Really?
So, oh, yeah.
A migration of the Slovaks from the southeast side of Cleveland?
From St. Wendland's, right down the road, and a good run from the old south side, St. John Cantius, from the Polish. Hmm. But a lot of Eastern Europeans now, not originally.
Not originally. Interesting. Well, coming up, St. Charles in Parma, a very special place serving the community in a variety of ways. On Where We Worship on AM 1260, St. Peter the Rock. And you're listening to Where We Worship on AM 1260, St. Peter the Rock Radio. This is your host, Bob Tayak, as we continue our prudent communication practices during COVID-19, but we are blessed to have the pastor of St. Charles in Parma, Father John Carlin, and parochial vicar, Father Josh Korak, join us in studio today to talk about St. Charles in Parma. Well, I have to jump right to this, Father, and Josh, maybe you can join us too. I'm sure you looked over history of the parish before you were newly assigned to it recently, but this just struck me because I'd heard about it as from when at my own childhood. But one bit of history was reading about St. Charles Summer Carnival, a real institutional event now in Parma. I had no idea the fundraiser dated back to the time of the Great Depression and so forth. And I wondered, Father, if you could give us a little insight on the history of the carnival. Because, you know, we hear of church carnivals, but this, I always get the impression, is much more than that. This is truly a Parma community event.
The first carnival was held in 1932, and it was shortly after the parish was founded, but it was at the height of the Depression. And Father Monahan said, some days we just barely made it. And he started the carnival to help meet the mortgage payments on the original school and property. And the only thing that has stopped the carnival in the last 90 years was World War II and now the pandemic. We couldn't do it this year. But it's been around for a long time, 5 nights, Wednesday to Sunday. We bank on the weather. We've always been blessed and lucky. And people turn out for it like you wouldn't believe. They close Ridge Road for the opening parade. And we go every night from 6:30 to 11 o'clock, and you name it, we've got it, and all kinds of good food, and two different bands at ends of the either end of the parking lot, and it's a nice neighborhood get-together.
Yeah, I'm sure it brings out the full community. Father, again, you referenced it. It dates back to the Depression.
1932, yes.
And they were in need of, obviously, to raise funds at that point, or at least some type of fundraising.
To meet the mortgage, and he said he couldn't have met the mortgage if he didn't have the carnivals to do it. I wish I had records as to what they made, mm-hmm. but we don't. But it was enough to, I guess, keep their heads above water. and they couldn't get consumer goods during the Second World War, but they started up right after the war again. And it's kind of interesting to look over photographs. I do have those. And in the early days, it was homemade cakes and afghans and sweaters and the ladies in house dresses and things like that wouldn't pass muster today. But then you got into transistor radios in the 50s, which I remember nobody else does. But
no, I do too. But yes, man, they were a high commodity at that point.
Was it.
I mean, get a transistor radio.
You made it. I was in the sixth grade.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But just as things developed over the years and what we're doing now and all the rest compared to prior years, you could kind of trace the history of the parish or trace American prosperity, if you will, by just what the carnival did over the years.
That's great. Well, let's hope we, of course, we'll get past this COVID pandemic, and then the carnival, at least you hope to resume, correct?
First meeting last week, Carnival 2021.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Excellent. When is it normally held? What month?
Usually we're in the middle of July. It always has a 15 in it, which was used to be the payday in the old days. So whatever had a 15 in it, that was when the carnival, mid-July at St. Charles.
Absolutely. That's good to know. But I just found that fascinating, and it really just started as a means to try to survive the depression for the parish, and it's evolved into what is truly a community event. You know, one of the other things that comes to mind, and I've heard this, and I had worked for years at the diocese about St. Charles, was, well, the gentleman sitting across from me right now, Father Josh, is one of many first assigned seminarians, or assigned to St. Charles.
Yeah.
And Father Josh, I just find that interesting. First, as you approached the whole situation, was there even any consultation with you about why they were sending you to St. Charles and why the assignment there?
Actually, not really. You know, the diocese has a process where they do have a point where we meet and kind of give some background information to a group of priests called the Clergy Personnel Board. They think about where they're going to put us, but ultimately, we don't really get any indication as to where we're going to go until the day that we find out. For me, it was probably about 2 months just before ordination, usually is a few weeks beforehand. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty good. And, you know, what have you found as you probably had to research the parish then as you were assigned.
Yeah.
And what was your determination of where were they putting me?
Well, you know, actually, I grew up not too far away. Originally, I grew up at the old Our Lady of Good Counsel Parish in Old Brooklyn. We had moved out to Olmsted Falls when I started high school. So maybe on paper, it didn't look like I was from the neighborhood, but I kind of was, I guess. And we went to St. Charles on occasion. I remember as a kid, we would go to Sunday night mass, and it was just a convenient time, I guess, for us. But I kind of remember going to mass. You know, maybe Father Carlin had it as I was a little kid, but now I'm working right next to him. So I've always been very impressed by St. Charles, just the parish in general. But yeah, you know, even the vocational aspect as well.
Father, that does beg the question, too. I know that in the past, and we're talking during the time of the baby boomers and on through, I always was marveling at the fact that St. Charles had an unbelievable schedule of liturgies. I mean, there are numbers of Sunday masses and, of course, the vigil mass and so forth. You still have a pretty active one. Let's assume COVID wasn't with us right now, but numbers of masses and participation, I always got the impression it was very strong.
I've looked back over the years, and at one time they had mass in the church and in the hall on a half-hour step. Mass in the church was on the hour. Mass in the hall was on a half hour. You finished the one mass and went over to the other one to help with communion in the days before Eucharistic ministers. I never experienced that, but I did see it when I first went there in 1983. There were 14 weekend masses.
14 weekend 14, masses.
14. And I was assigned there. What am I going to do? I'll be saying mass. I'll never get to know the people. But as the years have gone on, it went down from 10 till 8, and currently we're at around 5. Right now. That carries us through right now. But at one time, there were 5,800 families in the parish at its highest point, and that would have been, in the 1970s.
In the 1970s. Yeah. It also translates into the sacramental aspect of ministry. I mean, I can't imagine what your schedule must be like for everything. You know, well, let's go through it. You know, baptisms and confirmation, Eucharist, of course, funerals and so forth. It must be one active place with a heavy schedule.
We keep busy, and that poses a little bit of black humor. But 2 weeks ago, we had 8 funerals on the board at one time.
We did. Yeah.
Oh,
we
my
were,
goodness,
we were
really?
Juggling now. Who's got this? Can I get back in time from the cemetery to do this, to do that?
Yeah, yeah.
So we kind of have to, you have to have like a 48-hour stand back that you're able to work things out that, okay, we got to get this one in here. We got to do this. So you never say no to a funeral. We have no quarrel with the dead. So,
True.
Well, everybody deserves a good send-off.
So. No, but that's really, you know, to be that accommodating is really, well, an important aspect to what you do. Father, I was just looking, we're not far from Thanksgiving. And let's say if we were in normal times, are there any particular traditions or anything special around Thanksgiving that would be observed at the parish?
For many years, long before my time, there was a Thanksgiving mass, Thanksgiving Day mass in the morning at 9:30. And it always generated a full church. In later years, we began a twinning arrangement with Our Lady of Peace Parish on Cleveland's east side. And we ran a, during the month of November, canned food drive for them. We would send like 5 or 6 truckloads of food just every weekend, bring during November, Thanksgiving month, bring food to church. But on Thanksgiving Day especially, and people would come in with more stuff than you could believe. And it was a great thing to, and we still do that.
Mm-hmm.
This year, I don't know what.
Yeah, I was going to say this year it's kind of iffy, I'm sure,
right.
But
it's a long-standing tradition.
Yeah, hopefully that'll continue in better times. You're listening to Where We Worship on AM 1260 St. Peter the Rock. Our focus will be on the ministries and activities as they continue at St. Charles in Parma. When we continue on Where We Worship on AM 1260 St. Peter the Rock Radio. You're listening to Where We Worship on AM 1260 The Rock, Cleveland Catholic Radio, and our focus for this November 2020 broadcast, St. Charles Parish in Parma. I'm your host, Bob Tayak. My guests are St. Charles Pastor Father John Carlin and Parochial Vicar Father Josh Korak. And with the newly assigned Parochial Vicar, it brings up a thought, Father Carlin, about St. Charles Parish. And I had always heard in my days at the diocese, there's a pretty rich tradition of vocations, both to the priesthood and religious life, that have come through St. Charles. Is that accurate?
Bob, we are so blessed in that regard, and I think it's because of the strength of the Catholicity of the families there. As stated, I've been pastor 33 years. In that time, we've been blessed to have 16 first masses in the parish. Many for the diocese, priest, parish priests, and others for religious orders. And we've always had young men studying for the priesthood in the seminary, never been without. And young women for the religious life as well. Sister Ann Rosa is a Franciscan sister, TOR, just joined down there. Kind of proud of her down at Steubenville and some others that are interested. It's always been a very vocation-rich parish, and I think Father Josh could probably comment on that, too, from the seminary side.
Oh, certainly. Yeah, I've been in the seminary now since 2011, and I think I've gone to maybe 3 or 4 of those first masses as well myself. So seeing Father Jim Cosgrove, Father Kevin Klonowski, Father Tim Roth, just some of those I remember going to, but just seeing the beautiful history in the parish and watching the newly ordained priests get assigned to St. Charles, too, Father Ryan Mann, Father Terry Gratchinen, and just some of the younger clergy even, too, and it's really kind of a pretty neat thing. In fact, if you go into the rectory at St. Charles, there's a big hallway full. It's called the Hall of Fame, I guess, but it's just all the pictures of all the priests that have been assigned there over the years. It's a pretty neat thing to see such a diverse number of priests that have been assigned to the parish, too.
I bet. And Father, you mentioned the fact that it starts, I think, within the context of the family and their encouragement of those vocations. But are there other elements that might come into play? I do hear, we just had a conversation the other day on this program about, a life teen group. or, you know, that at another parish that had encouraged. Is there any element to that, whether it be LifeTeen or other element in the school that might encourage vocations that other parishes might even pick up on?
You know, one thing, if you don't mind me saying, one thing I think is really a beautiful testament. I've already noticed it even in the short time I've been at the parish, but just the people really love their priests at St. Charles. And I guess you could say that about a lot of places, but they just really value having the priest present to them, coming over their house or just seeing them at Mass just means a lot to them, and you can really tell. So there's, like Father Carlin had said, you know, there's just such a great Catholicity, perhaps in their family identity as well.
Mm-hmm. Tied in with that, in 2020, we keep hearing about young people and families unwilling to attend church and practice their faith. What does St. Charles do to encourage families and young people to attend in normal times? I realize COVID has really thrown some things out of kilter, but for the most part, any programs or thoughts on how you try to reach those younger people?
Well, it's been my practice for many years. If you want to enroll a child in the school, you sit down and talk to me first. And the principal and I will interview all parents and have a little talk to them, try to get a little pep talk on things. I'm not a policeman. I can't make them do things, but you do try to paint a big picture on what a good thing it is to do. In the last 3 or 4 years, we've worked out some parent catechetical programs for sacramental years, second and eighth grade, where you bring in a real good speaker over 4 nights and kind of challenge them to live their faith a little more dynamic way. Again, you try. You point the direction. But like the Lord says in the gospel, sometimes the harvest is 20-fold or 60-fold or 100-fold. So
no,
if
true.
He had it that way, we have to be satisfied with that, too. You keep trying.
But that sounds in itself like a brilliant idea, because all I keep reading now is that particularly the younger people who would be have their young families now, those folks in growing up maybe hadn't been catechized as well, you know, in the past, wherever they were, and now they need to enrich their faith. And it sounds like you're reaching, you know, the young family, the young adults. And that's a real credit.
I think the church calls it an evangelizing moment or a teachable moment, too. Mm-hmm. When you begin the child's education or a sacramental year, sometimes they say, you know, we got to pull this thing together a little bit. Not everyone, but some. So we keep trying.
For either of you fathers, are there any other ministries at the parish that you find particularly unique or that you would like to highlight or let people know about that exist, Father?
What pleases me a lot are the things that I don't know. I mean, you have your old line parish organizations and people want to join that and they enjoy community. But when I'll go to a wake for someone, they'll say, you know, Dad worked the meal at Malachy's for years. He did. I didn't know that. You know, that a lot of them do things on the side or very quietly that I've cooked at Maggie's place for once a month for a year. I didn't know that. A lot of things that they'll do. And people seem willing nowadays to volunteer very quickly for the Corporal Works of Mercy. That will do some, oh, yeah, I'll do that. But I don't want to go to the meeting and hear the reading of the minutes or do this or do that. But give me something I can do that I can do myself, and that it's a move on. That, I think, where we ought to be right now.
And it sounds like you are, and that's most encouraging.
Well, one of the essential elements in any church is the music program as it pertains to our liturgies. And Father Carlin, what about the music ministries at St. Charles? Can you give us a little insight on what's available?
We are so blessed at our parish. Our music director, Mr. Thomas Holzheimer, has been with us for almost 30 years, and Tom has developed a variety of great programs, the adult choir, a teen choir, youth choir, school choir, ably assisted by Maria Waring and by Carrie Perkins, and they do a tremendous job. They add such beauty to our liturgy, and Tom has a way of organizing an instrumentalist and all the rest, our holiday celebrations or big sacramental celebrations. We do, not to compare it to any place else, but we do hear some nice things from grandparents. This is beautiful, this is wonderful, and what a memory and all the rest. Now, if you're going to do it, I think Louis B. Mayer used to say it for MGM, do it big, do it right, and give it class. So,
and give it class.
So we certainly try to do
that.
We're so proud of what Tom and his team do for us, just even during these difficult times, getting as close as he can to when we can't sing, we can't do this, but providing beautiful background music. And for our online masses, which we do every day now, you know, he's provided for that. We're so blessed.
And really, most anybody is eligible to join if they'd like.
You name it, from primary kids right through to adults. We'll offer you something for that. If you can hold a tune, come on. We'll see what we can do for you.
Very good. So you've been listening to Where We Worship. This is your host, Bob Tayak, and this presentation featuring St. Charles in Parma. And Where We Worship is a production of AM 1260, St. Peter the Rock Radio, focusing on the essential aspects of community worship and participation in our Catholic life. As written in the Gospel of St. Matthew, chapter 2, prayer as a community is essential for our spiritual growth and personal well-being. God does not intend for us to bear our crosses alone.
Thank you for listening to Where We Worship with host Bob Tayak, presented by AM 1260 The Rock and the Catholic Diocese of Cleveland. If you missed any part of today's show, listen to the program in its entirety by going to our website, am1260therock.com, and click on the Archive Audio tab.
The preceding program was a production of St. Peter the Rock Media and is brought to you by you. If you liked it, consider making a donation and supporting Catholic radio programming on AM 1260 The Rock. Click on the Donate Now button in the upper right corner of the webpage.